All participants are now in listen-only mode.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us again today. This is the third of our COVID-19 partner calls. Your lines have been muted, and we do ask that folks send any questions they have to ccdph.covid19@cookcountyhhs.org during the call, and we'll try to address those questions as we go. I'll turn it over now to our Senior Medical Officer and Chief, Dr. Rachel Rubin. And just hit star six, Rachel, in order to for us to hear you.
Yes, hello? Can people hear me?
You're all set.
Okay, great. I wasn't sure. There was a little beep. All right, so thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. This is our third in a series of weekly COVID-19 conference calls with community partners. So I'm Rachel Rubin, one of the senior medical officers at Cook County Department of Public Health. And I'm also serving along with my colleague, Dr. Kiran Joshi, as the interim co-leaders of the department. As you know, Dr. Mason has left the agency, and he will be missed, but we are moving on and hope to continue our partnership with all of you going forward. So I'll be speaking with you today, and we are also glad to welcome Christine Haley, the Cook County Health Director of Housing, to speak with you all a bit about what CCDPH and Cook County Health are doing to address the needs of people experiencing homelessness during the pandemic. So we sent some information to you this morning so that you can follow along so that it won't be just sort of a string of in-depth kinds of descriptions because you have it in front of you. And all this information is also posted to our website. So if you didn't receive it by email today, you can find it now at our website, which is www.cookcountypublichealth.org. And you click the COVID page and scroll way to the bottom. And finally, we'll also be taking your questions by email today. So if you would like to submit a question for us to address during the call, you can email at ccdph.covid19@cookcountyhhs.org. So that's ccdph.covid19@cookcountyhhs.org. Okay, so what is the current situation? So as of this afternoon, there are 13,549 cases documented in Illinois with 380 deaths. And in suburban Cook County, we have 3,612 cases and 109 deaths. We cannot stress enough how important it is to continue social distancing and staying home when you are able, as that will save lives. The state has issued some new guidance and new executive orders over the last week or so. And Executive Order 16 is pertinent for organizations that are working with vulnerable families. It suspends all vehicle repossessions during the time of the emergency declaration. As the families you serve may continue to grapple with issues that affect their income and well-being, it's good to be aware that this is in effect. And Executive Order 18 extends the disaster proclamation until the end of April, and then it'll be reconsidered again at that point. It also declares school days moving forward as e-learning days, meaning that these days are considered instructional days, so schools should have a plan for reaching their students and engaging them in learning. So this transition ensures that the missed in-person school days do not need to be made up at the end of the school year in terms of receiving funding for schools. Order 20 allows people to apply for public assistance by phone without having to send or make a recording of their verbal attestation during the application. And we know that those phone lines are busy, so keep trying. tell your clients to keep trying. And Order 21 allows for longer furloughs for Illinois Department of Correction inmates that had been let out temporarily. And the URLs for these orders are on our webpage in the documents for today. And the governor announced yesterday an automatic increase for SNAP users. So all will now receive the maximum SNAP benefit. So people should start seeing those additional dollars this week. And just today, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle signed Executive Order 2020-9 to create the Community Recovery Initiative. So Cook County seeded an initial $10 million to create this emergency relief fund for businesses and 1099 workers in suburban Cook County. So the fund will grant loans to gig workers, basically, and small businesses to weather the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to this fund, Cook County created a new technical assistance network along with the American Business Immigration Coalition, the Illinois Restaurant Association, and the National Partnership for New Americans. So this initiative helps suburban small businesses and contract workers to successfully access the new small business loans created as part of the CARES CARES Act recently passed by Congress. And in the notes that we sent out today, we'll also include a link to register for a webinar hosted by the Cook County Transportation Alliance Network called How the Paycheck Protection Program Impacts Small Businesses in Cook County. Actually, it's Cook County TA Network. I'm not sure what the TA stands for. So again, it's How the Paycheck Protection Program Impacts Small Businesses in Cook County. And the webinar is taking place tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning. And the link for that is sent out. Recently announced also was an expansion in the state child care program, which is great. So all essential workers will now qualify for the state's child care assistance program. That means that regardless of your income, most or all of the cost of child care for essential workers will be covered. So child care centers that apply for and receive the emergency approval to provide care will be reimbursed 30% more than usual than under normal conditions. Also, IDPH has issued new guidance for pregnant women and women and newborns, including recommending social distancing between a positive mother, and her infant when possible. We understand that that might be very difficult, to see if that's at all possible, so there is appropriate guidance. There's also guidance about breastfeeding and not rooming in the facility space allows. So you are allowed to basically pump during an infection, but not breastfeeding your child if you are positive, if the mother is positive. The CDC issued new guidance about wearing masks in public, and this is a controversial subject. But the reason for it is that many people who have COVID-19 show no symptoms, and because research indicates that the virus can be spread amongst close contacts when no symptoms are present or before they manifest. So it's recommended that everybody wear masks in public where social distancing is difficult to maintain, so about grocery stores, pharmacies, you know, package pickup stores, places like that. So this doesn't mean that masks are a substitute for physical distancing or that we should relax our physical distancing efforts. The homemade masks are not perfect. They protect you if you're wearing them. They don't. They perfect the other person. They do not protect you. So if you wear a mask, you're not really protecting yourself. You're protecting others from coming in contact with the aerosolized breath when you breathe out or when you sneeze or cough. But the viral particles themselves from somebody else, if they are floating in the air, so the idea is not to get them into the air, can indeed penetrate these masks and come in because they're very small particles. So basically the masks are better than nothing, but the best thing to do is to stay home if you can and use social distancing. And in fact, there's some evidence that social distancing is actually working. So where people have followed the guidance to stay home, telework where they can, and where schools and restaurants have been closed, they have begun to slow the growth in infections. Preliminary data from California and Washington State, two states that were of the first to mandate their residents to stay at home and where schools and businesses have closed, shows that social distancing is working to slow the spread of the infection and so-called flatten the curve. So less people being infected and taking a longer period of time for the infection to spread. So hospitalizations are declining in Seattle, and data also shows declines in Illinois with fever reported in that city, which is great. I'm sorry, let me read that again. I misread. Hospitalizations are declining in Seattle, and data also shows declines in illness, not in Illinois, yet, not yet. The data shows declines in illness with fever reported in that city, in Seattle. It's important to keep up social distancing efforts. We will only see declines locally when people really adhere to the stay-at-home order. The consequences of not social distancing are real, and a recent research paper by Michael Goldstone and Ishan Nigam at the University of Chicago, based on previous modeling of the pandemic, concluded that moderate social distancing would save 1.7 million lives between March 1st and October 1st, with 630,000 due to avoided overwhelming of hospital intensive care units. So the idea is that social distancing saves lives because less people are going to become infected, and then there's also going to be less need for the most extreme measures in healthcare facilities, and we won't be running out of ventilators and critical care beds. Okay, so what is CCH doing? CCDPH doing, excuse me. What is our health department doing? So our COVID-19 new website went live last Friday. Which is great. So if you go to cookcountypublichealth.org, and right there at the top, after you read that little notice that goes there about social distancing, and you unclick that, you will then see the COVID-19 logo website, and click on that, and there's all kinds of information, in addition to information for families, businesses, and healthcare providers, and a searchable resource list. We added a new tool. It's a map and data visualization application that allows people to access COVID-19 counts and rates for the county and for the municipalities throughout Cook County, along with their case counts. And so it's called our Shiny app, and you will see the link right on the webpage, and we sent out the long involved URL in the handout if you wanted to click on that through your handout. We continue to field around 200 calls a day on our hotline, which is open 9 to 4, Monday through Friday, at 708-633-3319. And Cook County established an email for COVID-19 questions, which is also where you can send in now for your questions for this call. And it's ccdph.covid19@cookcountyhhs.org, like I had mentioned earlier. Also, people can receive text alerts, which are being pushed out by county government with our help. And you can text to Alert Cook, AlertCook. So that's what you type, and the address is 888-777. So you send a message to 888-777, and in the message line, type in Alert Cook. So CCDPH also continues to help healthcare providers as they respond to cases of COVID-19 in the community through support for testing, contact tracing, and case monitoring, and we're working in close coordination with the Chicago Department of Public Health, the Illinois Department of Public Health, and the CDC. And as we discussed last week, we also continue to work closely with congregate settings like nursing homes to ensure that they implement the best practices for residents' safety. So CCDPH staff is in daily contact with over 50 residential care facilities in the suburbs to ensure that their facilities are up to date on most recent guidance on COVID-19 and that the facility is not unnecessarily transferring patients to the hospital unless medically necessary. We are in conversations with them to ensure that staff masks appropriately, that all the staff have masks, and that they are conducting symptom checks before and after shifts. We have provided guidance so that visitors are restricted and that facilities are ensuring that positive patients are placed on droplet and contact precautions. We talk with them daily about new and existing cases, staffing issues, and requests for personal protective equipment. And finally, we had many questions last week about what CCDPH was doing to address the needs of people experiencing homelessness. And we are so glad to have Christine Haley, Cook County Health's Director of Housing, here with us today to speak to us about that in more detail. So, Christine, you're on.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Rubin. And hello, everyone. First, I'd just like to thank all of the homeless service providers in Cook County who are actively working to serve and to provide shelter and support to members of our community who are experiencing homelessness. So thank you to the providers and also to the Suburban Alliance to End Homelessness in Cook County, who has been leading multiple coordination and other activities to help support people experiencing homelessness in our county. So CCDPH has been working closely with the Suburban Alliance to create and homeless service providers as well as sister agencies within Cook County to create a coordinated response for COVID-19 for our neighbors who are experiencing homelessness. So currently, the service providers are serving over 300 households in emergency shelter, and that's an important piece for us to understand that there has been quite a bit of support that's been provided to homeless people experiencing homelessness who are pre-COVID pandemic experiencing homelessness who they are continuing to serve. There is a limited ability for the shelters to be able to house new guests. But Cook County is working closely with shelter providers in the community to create new capacity. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of those efforts. Last week, the Cook County Bureau of Economic Development announced $150,000 in grant funding to support homeless service agencies to help them in responding to the pandemic. We have also created an interagency work group to ensure that across county sister agencies that we are coordinating our response. So it's led by us at Cook County Health and the Cook County Department of Public Health, and it includes participation from the Department of Emergency Management and Regional Security, the Bureau of Economic Development, the Bureau of Asset Management, the Housing Authority of Cook County, and the Justice Advisory Council. And again, the goal of this work group is to ensure that we are coordinating funding and our strategic initiatives to support people experiencing homelessness and the agencies that support them during this pandemic. We also see that the federal stimulus bills to support homeless households during the pandemic includes increases to the funding that supports people experiencing homelessness in shelter and in housing. So the Emergency Solutions Grant that funds shelter activities and rental assistance, the Community Development Block Grant, the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and project-based rental assistance were all included in stimulus funding. And we look forward to working with the community on how to best utilize those resources. Last week, CCDPH and the Illinois Public Health Institute convened hospitals in suburban Cook County to inform them of the current needs and activities within shelters and talked with them about what needs the homeless services community would need in order to expand operations to new guests. So there are a few hospitals that are working to identify what supports can be provided to partnering shelters across the county, and there is a meeting scheduled that will be led by Advocate Aurora Health in the coming week to further those initiatives along in partnership with IPHI and Cook County. So Cook County's Health's Infectious Disease Department is also lending their expertise to help support area shelters. Cook County Health has offered to provide one-on-one in-person consultation to the shelters to answer questions they may have on implementing national guidance on creating social distancing guidelines within congregate settings. So that is our current activity, and we look forward to continuing partnership with the community as we are ensuring equitable access and services to people experiencing homelessness at this time. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Christine. We really appreciate you being here. You know, I think we're ready to move from some questions that we received. Rachel and Christine, are you there?
Yes.
Wonderful. We might be.
Yes.
Great. Thanks. Terrific. Thank you. All right. You know what? I think we've just received two questions today, so let me read those to you. One question has to do with our work in congregate settings. And the question is, does our outreach include assisted living, age-restricted or independent living facilities as well as the kind of more nursing home settings? And I'm not sure I know the answer to that one. Great. Yep, so are we working with age-restricted independent living facilities too? Rachel, do you know?
I was on mute. Yes, we are. Most independent living, not most, but many independent living facilities also have assisted living, so they would be on our radar anyway. But yes, if we are aware of independent living, but senior living centers, we are working with them.
Wonderful, thanks. And then our second question was about our Shiny app. So there was just a clarification about what the counts are based on. So it says, just to clarify, are the counts based on where individuals live? We're curious about whether where a patient is diagnosed plays any role in the counts.
Yeah, that's a very good question. No, these are based on where people live, not where they've been diagnosed. I would say that where there might be more of a relationship is not only where you live, but where you work, especially early on, because people were getting exposed also where they work. But generally speaking, it doesn't seem to be having – most people go to or have been hospitalized in places where – near where they live. So it's not like somebody has been, you know, diagnosed. Maybe I'm not understanding the question quite right, but I think generally there's a match between where they live and where they are diagnosed, unless you're talking about travelers, especially early on and even continuing till now, returning travelers from areas of the world that had high counts, such as China and South Korea, Italy. We were certainly seeing people who were diagnosed here but were exposed there overseas, but that's becoming less and less as there's less international travel. It's almost completely stopped. And as there's become more and more community-wide transmission where we don't really even know where the source is.
Great. And those were all the questions we've received for today. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Well, then thank you, everyone, for joining us again this week. You know, if you have any topics that you'd like covered on any upcoming calls, go ahead and send an email to that same address, ccdph.covid19@cookcountyhhs.org, and let us know, and we'll do our best to get you the information you need. Thank you. Thank you, Rachel, and thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Terrific. Bye. We'll see you again next Tuesday at 4:00. Thank you.